The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We'll kick things off with our afternoon update. Shane Hannan from Off the Ball is with me, and Jen Hogan, columnist with the Irish Times. You're both very, very welcome. I want to ask you about a study, a survey from the University of Galway. We're going to be talking about it after 5 o'clock. And Eamon mentioned it in the news headlines. And Jen, essentially, it's that teenagers physically are kind of healthier than they've ever been, but unhappier as well. Kind of drinking less, smoking less, but there's vulnerabilities and problems and mental health issues there.
Yeah, I would actually also say, knowing teenagers as I do, both in terms of owning a load of them and working with them quite a lot in my job and speaking to them over the years and interviewing them, teenagers can be a little bit cautious about sharing. Even when they're told something's anonymous, they can be a little bit cautious about sharing things, honestly. So when I saw some of the statistics around vaping and not having touched alcohol, I'll be honest, I was thinking, yeah, how honest were they there? But it does make grim reading. I mean, a lot of it, their mental health is really suffering, with girls in particular reporting that they are feeling very happy with life at a much lower level than boys, which is still also pretty brutal. It's only a third of boys report that. The being physically active, only a very small proportion, while it's an increase and it's maybe a slight improvement, only quite a small proportion said that they get the 70 minutes activity a day. So we're still at that situation where we don't have them active enough. And then we have, I think, something like a quarter of children say that they're having fruit and vegetables every day. But that still means three quarters aren't. So, you know, we still have massive problems. But when you look into this and you delve into this and you realise how much teens are struggling, and that we have 40% of them saying that their mental health is in a worse place since the pandemic restrictions. And I mean, this is not a shock. This is certainly not a shock to any of us who were screaming about it at the time and even vilified for it. But when you take away school and you take away their supports and you take away their interactions with their friends and you take away everything that they thought was certain and guaranteed in life, and like the teenagers in particular had a really difficult time because some of them didn't get back till the middle of April in 2021. That we forget about, you know, that they were out for quite a long period of time. Some of them won't lament having missed their state exams and the junior cycle exams were cancelled. They might not lament that or even the mess around the leaving cert for some. But it was a hugely, hugely stressful time at a very vulnerable time in their lives. And even those who are now teens and maybe might have been pre-teens at the time, there was a fallout. Like, there was always going to be a consequence for such serious actions. Yeah. And we just had to buy this whole kids are resilient line.
And do you think
line.
We've kind of... the penny has dropped on that front? Is it just something that you've got to work through incrementally and it kind of over time they'll all get over it? Or should policymakers and schools and parents and everybody else be more proactive in kind of recognising, hold on, we still have a lingering problem here and we should do something about it?
That's what you'd like to see. You'd like some acknowledgement of it as well. I think even as a parent or as somebody who works with young people, I would like to see some acknowledgement about what children actually went through. This report certainly gives us kind of some indication of how much they're struggling, but we are going to need to invest in supporting them. Like, we are actively going to need to invest in supporting them and helping them get through this. Now, teenagers are no like walk in the park at the best of times, you know, and there's hormones and there's social media and there's all these other influences going on as well. But the fact that the pandemic restrictions were identified as being problematic for their mental health and creating these issues, we need to actively work in supporting them and helping them be where they need to be, because we also had this thing that because we put their childhood on hold, we very much put their childhood on hold. So they got older, but they didn't get to have the experiences that they should have had that would have helped them, you know, shape and form different aspects of their personalities. And this resilience that we keep very conveniently bandying about, like, oh, kids are resilient, they bounce back, with people not really understanding how resilience actually works. To give them the opportunities to develop as they should have and to manage situations and to have that support. And resilience really grow building on the fact that they had that support, they needed that support and they needed those interactions and they needed those experiences, because they missed out on experiences too. We can't give them back the time, we can't do that, but what we can do is actively support them and actively listen to them, because nobody was listening to the kids, nobody was listening to children's advocates, nobody was listening. It was just it's a pandemic, we have to stop everything and forget the kids because they're only kids.
Yeah, when we talk about forgetting the kids, often a feature of these conversations on the radio and elsewhere is that you kind of talk about a group of people and you don't actually talk to them. Yeah. And after 5 o'clock, actually, we're going to hear from kind of a group of transition year students. So slap bang in the middle of this cohort, this age cohort who are surveyed. And I chatted to them earlier on, so I don't want to give everything away. But Shane, a few of them did mention some of the things that Jen brings up around COVID-19, about kind of the lingering effects of lockdown and all of that, being shut away from their friends and their peer groups and denied experiences. One of the young fellas made a really interesting observation. He said he wondered whether there was kind of a connection between the physically healthier and the mentally unhealthier. And he talked about some of his friends who put huge effort into eating the right food and looking the right way. So they are very physically healthy, but they're doing it because they are chasing an image on Instagram of what they're meant to look like.
Yeah.
You know, and here, you know, so it's kind of the Lord giveth with one hand and take it away with the other.
It sets a bar very, very high for them. There is a generational trauma thing as well there from COVID, 100%. We all suffer from it a little bit. If you're on Dart or Lewis and someone coughs, we all shudder a little bit and take a step back. There's also, I think teenagers are more societally aware possibly now than even when I was a teenager. Like, you know, what's going on in Gaza, climate change. They're more familiar. Maybe it's through the medium of social media or whatever else, but they're tuned into what's going on in the world. And let's be honest, a lot of the stuff that's going on in the world, if you sit and watch the news, is grim and is depressing. And kids are aware of that. Has to have an impact on their mental health. The vaping stats were, like, again, like you, Jen, taken with a pinch of salt, because I've talked to secondary school teacher friends of mine who say it is just rampant. Yeah. Like, they're swapping, instead of swapping Pokemon cards and football cards, you're swapping Tripa Melons with watermelons. And, like,
Tripa Melon
is one of those flavours of
like three different
of
types of melon, or just
all molded into one
strong watermelon.
Extra strong melon, I think.
Oh, so it's like watermelon, honeydew, and
essentially
something else.
And like, I was one of these people.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. And for my own sins, and maybe it was a post COVID thing as well, but a couple of years ago I was on the vape train for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't have even been a smoker.
Well, what flavour were you going for?
I was going for watermelon. I was like, there was cola vape.
It's all Harry Styles. Kids' flavours. It absolutely is.
It's ridiculous. And it was only on nights out now for myself, in fairness. But genuinely, the hangover and the anxiety afterwards, after smoking vapes left, right and centre for the night before.
Really?
Remarkable. Like, even compared to cigarettes, I think. I don't know the science behind it, but I would have to say, mixing vape with alcohol, or even just if you're having vapes throughout school, that has to have an impact on your mental health. Even the cyberbullying stats, the fact that the cyberbullying stats were similar to the vaping stat as well, those 18% reported being cyberbullied compared to 15% a few years ago, 9% reported having taken part in cyberbullying. Like, how are you supposed to be mentally okay if you're dealing with the likes of that? And I would also say those numbers are possibly reported as lower than they really are again.
And I think sometimes, even around, like what Shane's saying, around the bullying, when they spoke to people and asked, or children asked them if they had taken part in bullying, I mean, how many, and the boys admitted to it more than girls did. But I also wonder around the different ways that children bully, and the different ways the sexes bully. And often, because, you know, we associate kind of maybe the physical bullying or particular behaviour with boys, girls might be honestly a little bit oblivious to the fact that their behaviour could be interpreted as bullying, or even that they are engaging in bullying because of that different way, the kind of psychological way that it often presents itself.
They're slyer.
Yeah, which is, I suppose, the reality. There is that
terrible.
A little bit. I mean, I don't like to do sweeping generalisations like you've just done there, Kieran, but yes, you might be onto something there. And then there was the whole socioeconomic thing as well. Again, those from the lower socioeconomic backgrounds struggled more. You know, they're the children who are going to bed hungry at night. They're the kids who are going to school hungry. Mm. There's 10% of girls are experiencing period poverty. The fact that we have a group of children who don't have the basics in life, it is no wonder that we're seeing statistics here where such a low number are reporting high levels of happiness.
John the Napper has a theory. Kids are unhappy because they can't move out and get their own place, and they're healthier because they're eating all my good food instead of the normal student boiling the bag gig, says John. And actually kind of brings us on to the other story that is getting attention today about the increase in rents, much more prevalent outside of Dublin, but still playing catch up really on what is the rate. In Dublin, the average rental increases across the country, like percentage wise, far higher than rent pressure zones would have you believe they should be, Jen. I mean, this is a problem. It's a problem we kind of talk probably slightly less and less about because you don't know what to say about it anymore. Yeah. It's just become wallpaper almost.
I mean, the arrogant Dublin me, you know, who kind of lets everybody know when she ventures beyond the pale, goes, people want to live outside of Dublin. You know, this is shocking. But it is. Yeah, Limerick is where rates are growing at the fastest rate. And this is on new tenancies. But I suppose it's, again, another thing from the pandemic. People were told that, you know, they could work remotely, they could work from home. The fact that was an option to them, even the hybrid model, still means that, you know, you're only having to tackle a commute to wherever a couple of times a week perhaps. So when you have those options, why not avail of them? And it gives people a chance maybe to live closer to family, live closer to where they grew up, whatever it actually is that they want. But it is also really depressing to see that it's now becoming this widespread problem, really widespread problem, and you can't afford to live anywhere in Ireland.
How are you supposed to save for a house when you're also paying rent? Like, you'd want to be on a six-figure plus job to be able to do that. It's like, not least in Dublin, but to see these figures now outside of Dublin. And I was even looking at figures from towards the end of last year. So in these stats, 800 out of 1,800 available homes to rent in Ireland were located outside the capital, which is not many whatsoever. Go back pre-COVID, things were bad, but then you would have had about 1,500 homes to rent in Dublin and 2,000 to 2,500 in the rest of the country. So the rest of the country is being decimated when it comes to supply. And it's that word, isn't it? Every time we come back to it, supply is at 100,000 affordable homes delivered by the government so far. And that's, the rent pressure zones that you guys mentioned. I mean, I would be sceptical as to whether that's all being policed rightly and whether landlords and whatever else are abiding by all those rules. But a lot of my friends are in the process of buying homes or trying to save to buy homes, and they're just finding it absolutely impossible. And I'm talking about Monaghan, which maybe over the next 5-10 years is going to be more and more in the commuter belt. Anywhere within 2 hours of Dublin will be. But to try and buy a home or save to buy a home while paying rent at the moment, it's just nigh on impossible.
Yeah, but it is interesting you mentioned the commuter belt and the ability to work remote. And you do see that. I mean, you know, there was a kind of a muddling through period post-COVID where we didn't know how long this is going to last, the hybrid model. And it certainly looks like now it is kind of, it's here for good, some version of it. You know, it's been around long enough. And you do see places like Urlingford, which is kind of on the Kilkenny-Tipperary border, which is that bit too far away from Dublin or Cork, really, for people to commute. And they've just opened a new big kind of one of these hubs in the old bank. And you see that in other places as well. You know what I mean? They started during COVID, but they're still popping up, which would suggest there's still that appetite. Mm. And then the consequence of that appetite as well. Right, it means the main street in Urlingford is thriving. Mm. But there's a pressure on rents in the area.
There is. And I suppose, like, you can't see things ever going back to the way that they were. And even if you look at it, all these things always tend to feed into each other. And we know as well as that we have a childcare crisis. So for any young families out there who are trying to get childcare, a lot of them, there was actually a survey carried out by Aldi there a while ago, the Mammies and Daddies report. And it showed that half of parents, they take care of their children while they're working, so they don't have childcare, so they have to have a hybrid model. That's the only way that's going to work. At the very best or the very worst, they have to have a hybrid model. So I suppose in that situation, moving further from where you work is something that maybe is a possibility for you if you have that hybrid model available to you. But it is impossible. It is, like, I can't see it going away. I can't see anything changing in spite of the attempts to try and pull people back into the office that we're hearing about. So it makes sense that it's something we're going to see. Well, it doesn't make sense, but it's the reality that we're going to see it spread further and further afield.
Before I let you go, Shane, is Ciara Kelly right? they GAA won't let rugby fans drink in Croke Park because it's a foreign game.
Well, of course, that's not exactly the reason why. But yeah, like, this Ciara, issue is...
Ciara's always right. That's the
Ciara's
answer,
always
Shane.
Right. We'll say that on air, live and exclusive. look, this whole thing is ridiculous. I don't think any true proper rugby fan or Leinster fan really cares about the ability to actually drink in their seat. Naturally, that is what they do at games at the ODS and at the Viva Stadium, and it adds to the atmosphere. I get that, but the true rugby fans aren't necessarily there. There was, like, Jerry Thorny was
chatting. I don't like drinking at a match.
No.
Or even before a match. I'd never have a pint before a match.
I know, I'd have a pint before a GAA match.
No, no way. But should I be clear headed? What if there's a few injuries?
And you get the call up. Well,
I always have my gear with me, just in case. Derek Ling is listening. It's there, Derek. Yeah. I'm ready.
100%.
I don't know. Like, I think, I mean, look, I'm unlikely to be called up if Leinster are found. But at the same time, it's kind of part of the experience. I'm not advocating that Croke Park change their rules here. I wouldn't dare, I wouldn't dream of going against the GAA on this. But I think it is part of the experience. And having attended a couple of matches, it was kind of nice, you know.
But it's got a bit corporate and you're getting at rugby matches. Gerry Thorney was even on News Talk today and he was saying, anecdotally talking to people, one man in particular who brought his 80-year-old father to an Irish rugby Six Nations match recently. And the amount of times he had to stand up to see the pitch because people are going back and forth.
Now, for what it's worth, I think there's been clarification since News Talk Breakfast this morning that actually what's happened with rugby is just that when there's a sporting event on in Croke Park, there's just uniform rules. Whether that's Gaelic, like you can't drink in your seat at a GAA match.
No, you can't.
Or a rugby match or a football match or if there's an American football, whatever it happens to be. If it's a concert, it's different.
But if you're singing
rules.
About friends in low places, it's different.
Wow. The whiskey's dry, though. If you're
But Leinster fans aren't being told to go dry. Drink your pints if you want, safely, responsibly, before the game, after the game, at half time as well, by the way. Croke Park, they're much faster getting the pints out because they have them all ready at half time compared to the Aviva Stadium. They have them poured, ready to go. So there's no issue here.
Something else the GAA does better than the foreign sports. Bloody rugby crowd. I'm with Kira. Listen, Shane, thanks a million. Shane Hannan, presenter of Off the Ball. Jen Hogan, columnist with the Irish Times.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.